boost our little early. I see no one else is on the Zoom except for us three. So the team might be surprised. But if you guys want to start.
Well, we do need a fourth member of this team to push the buttons.
Oh,
oh
my God.
What? Silent but deadly.
That's like stealth mode. What the heck was that?
That
wow.
was
also, my outburst probably
amazing.
Broke his meters. Wow.
What? That is,
oh,
you know
my
what?
Goodness.
That was really on brand for Drew Justin.
That was really good.
Really on brand.
Yes.
I sneaked down
yes,
to the
yes,
credits
yes.
to see
oh, my
who hit
goodness.
Us with that one.
Oh, that was smart.
Oh, hi.
I intentionally was not saying anything.
It's Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart Daily Edition, where this time the reason that Kai Rizdahl and I were not ready for the music is because it's 3 minutes early and they just went with it.
It's,
and I love it.
And he just hit the button. He just we
it was like
worked
a
on
sneak
this story
attack.
For a year and he just tweeted it out. Yeah.
Sneak attack.
So it is Wednesday. It
good
is
one,
what do you want
one.
To know Wednesday? Thank you. I know. Thank you so much for sending those questions. Let me give it to you one more time. It's makemesmartatmarketplace.org. Put questions in the subject line, or you can put anything there. Voice memo, email, we'll take them all. General thoughts, comments. We just ask that you be kind, please, because we're people too. All right. Anyway, to it. To
yes.
it.
Definitely. Let's do it. We got a couple questions on higher education because we did that deep dive yeah. last week. I would imagine that as of today, there are a lot more questions about education and school overall. We'll save some of that for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Here, though, is a question from Blake Reynolds, who writes, people say college is expensive, but why? Many people say college is expensive. But Blake wants to know, why is it more expensive for students now than it was in the past? Is the problem fixable? And if so, how? That last part is a topic for like years worth of podcasts, I think.
Yes.
However,
Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Scott Galloway said on this podcast, well, the Tuesday version of it a while ago, that this will be the great leveler, right? I mean, there will still be the top tier that's going to be fine, but everybody, there's going to be a reckoning in higher education.
Yes, true. But the reckoning will just lead to more inequality, and then the top tier will be even more top.
Yes.
What we can say is that empirically, costs have gone up over the last 5 years. And there's a story from 2014, actually, so over the last decade plus. Mm-hmm. So there's a story from 2014 in NPR that just gives some good facts and figures, like how in Arizona, parents saw a 77% increase in university costs, in Georgia 75%, at Washington State 70%. And it's not entirely, I mean, I don't know. I think the why is probably just the same why as everything, right? Like, make money?
Yeah, that's exactly it. The why has two facets, if you will. One, number one is you get paid more if you're a college graduate, right? Like, a lot more. And number two is when things go south, and especially we've seen this in this recession, right? When things go south, high schooler graduates are more likely to lose their jobs than skilled workers and college-educated workers. And it's not fair, but that's why people are willing to spend. And let's not even talk the Ivies or, you know, what's Middlebury at like 70, whatever the heck, $1,000 it is, right? Let's not even talk that one, right? Even you know, mid-tier, mid-price colleges, you're better off with than without.
Well, and also I retract. Like, I sort of cavalierly said it's just to make money, but at public schools, it's because education is the first place that gets cut when states have a hard time with their budgets. So around 1970, it sounds like, because of a lack of federal and state investment in schools, borrowing to college to pay for college really took off. And so then banks could make money on those loans. Public investment dropped. And this story from 2014 cites the Urban Institute saying that drop in public investment in state schools, for example, is the single biggest reason for the increase in college costs. So many, it's so interesting how so many of the things that were, I kind of want somebody to do like a, hey, we could do it. What if we did a podcast that was like things that started in the 80s? Because around then, 70s
like
and 80s, right?
It could
that's
be a
when.
Series. Yeah.
It could be like, I don't know, it could be like a series. It could be like when greater uncertainty increased, like the uncertain hour. Anyway, if only there were a podcast series in house.
Well, no, but look, things that started in the 30s that we're still dealing with today, things that started in the 40s that we're still dealing with today, right? That's the podcast. says the
But this geek. Disinvestment, yeah. I mean, even just in recent right. times, when you look at you know, when you look at the marginal tax rate for the wealthy going from like 70 or 80% to more like 20 and then down and down and down from there, when you yeah. look at the, you know, in the drop in public investment and in the social safety net, you look at the start of the war on drugs, like you could really yep. trace a lot of disinvestment in public services and the safety net and budgets to some of the inequalities that we're seeing yeah. now.
Totally. Totally, totally.
So Tara Nieves,
of a piece.
Producer of both of these things, Make Me Smart and A History of Now, which is the pop-up podcast that The Answer Now are just, yeah. just completed, said we could just, it's like the crossover edition right now.
Make Me Smart, A History of Now. Very nice. Very nice. Okay. So moving on. Question number two, it's about housing and who's going to be able to stay in their homes. Because as we all know, you ain't making money, you ain't paying your rent. And at some point, the pause on evictions is going to run out. And that's where our next listener from Florida, she you'll discover why at the end of this clip, but she doesn't want to give her name. Here's the voice memo she sent in about evictions and what is going on.
Long-time listener from the very first episode, first time reaching out to nice. Ask for a better understanding on the foreclosure moratorium that's been put in place. Our governor just recently extended the moratorium from June 30th to August 1st. Now, this is for foreclosures and evictions. I know that the mm-hmm. CARES Act put in place a moratorium for evictions and foreclosures to the end of May, and then the FHFA extended that to the end of June, and now again to the end of August, ending August 31st. So I'm reaching out to get an understanding as to why does my governor or any other governor in another state, why would they need to set another moratorium at the state level, especially when it doesn't go past what the federal date is? I really would love some clarity on that. I know I'm going anonymous, and I know I'm not the only one in the same boat, but there's still a level of shame for me with this. So it's very hard for me to really openly state who I am, because I've never found myself in this situation before, and I'm still grasping with that.
Yeah, so let's take that last piece first, that shame piece.
Yeah.
Because clearly what has happened is that this person has lost a job or come upon super hard times and now can't make rent. And especially now, I mean, always, but especially now, when it's happening to so many people so fast with so little warning and so little fault, shame is really bad right now, because this is a universal problem that so many people, like millions and millions of people, are having. So that's point number one. Point number two, I would say, is that, look, with the capriciousness of the Trump administration on federal policies ranging from environmentalism to education to banking to housing and almost anything, I think what governors are doing, even if the dates run concurrently, is just protecting their citizens and saying, listen, we're going to put this moratorium into place because, frankly, we don't know what the federal policy is going to be. You know, that seems to me to be the most likely reason.
And yet, I mean, I understand okay. our caller is saying that the Florida date is sooner than the federal mm-hmm. date. And as to why that, I mean, you know what? All yeah. I can say is I'm so sorry that you're in this position. Yeah. I'm so, so sorry. And I hope that among all of the things that people are putting pressure on leaders about, this is one of them. I think it does not help you for us to say that millions of people are in this boat, but millions of people are in this boat and headed toward, we yeah. keep calling it a cliff. It is a cliff. Like yep. it is a cliff, and it is a cliff that has to get fixed. 20%, they say, of the 110 million renters in this country could be evicted by September, with African-American mm-hmm. and Latino renters expected to be hardest hit. Like, we yeah. can't, as a country, let this happen. It's yeah.
It's for sure coming. Yeah. And the yeah. ball now, just super quick, is with Congress, right? And it's with Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader Congress. In the Senate, to decide. And he's got till the end yep. of the month, because that's when expanded unemployment benefits and all kinds of other stuff run out. So that's the pressing issue. You know,
it is. Anyway. I don't know what that does for state moratoriums, but I would assume that there's a pretty good case to be made that if federal moratoriums outlast state ones, you at least can have a fight on your hands with your landlord. I guess.
Just because there's a case to be made doesn't mean it's going to fly. But anyway, yes. Yes.
I know, but we're trying to help here.
Okay. All right.
Let's try to help a little bit. Someone is about to lose her house. Right. Yeah. Come on, man. Get on board.
Okay.
Okay, so our next question comes from listener David Sigelnik in Plainfield, Indiana. He writes, I personally think that the drop in the unemployment rate was an illusion created by the CARES Act and the federal government. That is this most recent drop, by the way, that we saw at the end of last week. My question, David says, is when the PPP runs out and if the economy is not really up to speed yet, how badly do the wheels fall off and how far do we fall? That's the cliff. That's the cliff we're talking about.
Very badly and far.
So far.
Right. I mean, so look, so there's still $100 billion, more than $100 billion in the PPP fund. So if you run a small business out there and you need money, get the paperwork in. You've still got time to do that. Forgiveness is actually not going to be too much of a challenge for those overwhelming majority of borrowers who are getting loans below $150,000. But the cliff is, yes, it's the PPP, but honestly, the cliff is the expanded unemployment benefits, right? I mean, that's the deal.
Mm-hmm. And the eviction moratoriums and the reclosing of businesses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is there any merit in getting into the whole misclassification thing on unemployment? No, there's not. Never mind. We'll wait for an unemployment question. Never mind. Only my last. Carry on.
It's different, but it is important because we're not, I mean, the fact that we're not even counting right, I think that is a very fair thing to raise, because the fact that we're not even counting right is could let Congress get complacent. So explain.
I personally think Congress can get complacent all by its lonesome. But so here's what happened. Starting in March and April and continuing through to this most recent set of job numbers, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which has been really upfront about this, has had some challenges in figuring out whether people were actually permanently out of work or simply on temporary furlough. Because the people themselves, when answering the surveys that the Labor Department and the Commerce Department, Census Bureau actually did, they didn't know how to answer that question because people weren't sure. And so what that has resulted in is to use the vague sensibility of the Bureau of Labor Statistics' language, a misclassification error that would make the unemployment rate seem lower than it actually is. They're working on it. They're trying. But those numbers are a little bit up in the air because of the scale of what has been happening. I hope that wasn't too obtuse.
Right. No, it's just, it's part of the illusion. I think it's,
It's
definitely worth explaining because I think there is just delusion in the stock market. There's delusion in Congress about this question of the wheels.
Yeah. The cliff. Yeah.
It is. Which I don't really understand because, again, here we are, all of us. It seems like everybody, it seems like this is not hard to see. And yet there's just sort of a willful obliviousness in effect that affects real lives.
Yeah,
right. Totally. All right. Do we want to do any other questions or just go to the, we have this one about YouTube TV.
Is there one about YouTube TV? Go ahead. Let's go.
There totally is. We were talking about that before
Drew surprised us.
Yes. Let's do it. John Hubbard, real quick, we'll sneak this one in, says, can you cover the recently announced increase in the price of YouTube TV from $50 to $65, a 30% increase enacted in the middle of a global pandemic? Google tried to claim it's the cost of content and to offset adding Viacom channels. But as you can imagine, Twitter is having none of us. What? Twitter at large, having none of it. What in the world would cause a company with a net worth of $1 trillion to make such an obvious PR faceplant like this? At what point do these skinny bundles cost more than just basic cable since you need to have internet to use them? You are right, John Hubbard.
Amen.
I don't know.
Over to you, Molly Wood. Yeah, over to you. Yeah, I mean you're sticking with it, right?
Is flabbergasting. I canceled. Like, immediately. Yeah. I was like, there's no way. I mean, I can't. I have all of the same questions that you have, John, which is like, how badly is it even possible to sort of misread your customer? Like, your core customer is someone who is obviously price sensitive to some extent because they cut the cord, right? They were like, I want this, this amount of money doesn't make sense to me. They're price insensitive enough to pay $50 a month for live TV and say, I want some sort of a cable replacement. But they're aware enough of pricing to have done the math and been like, this is still a better deal than cable. And all of a sudden, it's not. Now, bigger picture, people who have been talking about this, including myself, for years and years, like, sort of have always, it was always a known, shall we say, that the cost of a la carte television and content would eventually be as expensive or more so than cable, because content is really expensive. And companies and publishers of this content, owners of content, are making it more expensive to get access to it, in some cases because they're starting their own streaming services. So you have this sort of like ecosystem effect where everybody's got their own thing and you have to pay for all of those. But the fact is that the kind of like cable nightmare that we've all lived under for so long was the only thing that paid for the content. It's just that it got like out of hand and wrapped up in crazy contracts, and it had the whole ESPN bundling thing attached to it. It doesn't cost any less to make really good TV, and now there's a lot more of it. But yeah, the skinny bundles cost more than basic cable, no doubt.
Side note from Tony Wagner in the Slack. They should have at least waited until live sports came back. All the World Series ads are the only time I've been tempted, which is a fair point, right?
Yes. No, yeah. I actually said that exact thing. I was like, there's no reason for me to do this because there's not even any sports. Cancel. It's just like it's bad timing. I don't know if it means they want to get out of the business or what, but it makes no sense. And I'm out. I, for one, am out, John Hubbard.
All right, super quick from Melissa Korch. She says, on a lighter note, Kai and Molly, what did you think of the Hamilton movie? I have thoughts. I have two specific thoughts.
Hit me.
Number one is, well, it's two and a half specific thoughts. Point number one is it was super cool to be that up close because I've only ever seen it from like the rafters. Point one and a half is Lin-Manuel Miranda, while a genius, is not that good an actor, might I just say.
Yeah.
Okay. Point number two, what do we make of Eliza's gasp at the end? What is that about?
Okay, well, that is the thing that I was going to bring up. Because there's this amazing thing that just popped up on Twitter today to explain it. This lady,
is this the one where you break the fourth wall and this lady who did the TikTok thing?
Yeah. And it's so great.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
She did this thing. So if you haven't watched it yet, and I will say I agree with all of that, and it was weird. And at first it was like hard to get immersed because, you know, they're it's theater, but it's also movie, and it was kind of weird. But then eventually the singing wins me over like always, but then I couldn't deal with the deaths at the end because they're totally heartbreaking, blah, 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 blah. Anyway. But then there's this ending part where in Eliza's last scene where she's singing about who lives, who dies, who tells your story, and she wishes Hamilton had more time, and I always cry through the whole thing. She started the orphanage. Oh, my God. There's this moment where she looks out at the audience and she just gasps. And so this woman,
it's the last
KK,
moment. The very last moment
it's
of the show.
It's the last, yes, exactly, and then it ends, has this incredible theory that is up on Twitter, and it's got to be the thing. And she says, in the last scene, she's looking at, I wish we could like play the audio. I should have queued this up in some sort of, I don't know, radio way. She says, when at the last moment when Eliza says, who tells your story? And you see Hamilton appear. She said, that's not Hamilton. It's Lin-Manuel Miranda. When he comes out and he takes her hand and he leads her to the front of the stage. I'm totally going to cry. I'm such a crier. I am just a mess. He leads her to the front of the stage. And she breaks the fourth wall and looks out at the audience and realizes that he, Lin, told her story. And then she's like, oh, my
God.
Her story.
Yeah.
Cry.
Well, I got some
so
chills.
Beautiful.
I got some chills.
It was so great. Right. Yep.
And let us know what you think about that theory, by the way. MakeMeSmartAtMarketplace.org. Because I've run it by my two kids and my wife who enjoyed that with us. They're not convinced of the Lin-Manuel thing, but they do appreciate the told her story thing. So we'll see. I don't know.
At a minimum, it is freaking lovely. It is lovely. And she narrates it over the thing, and then you see her do it while she's narrating, and then some crying may occur. Audience, that we will post a link to that TikTok via Twitter, which is how I consume so much TikTok lately. Side note, sub thing. On our show notes at makemesmart.org, you will find links to all the things that we talked about. And I know it because I just put the link in the Slack. It's going to happen.
There you go. Boom. All right. Out of here.
All right, bye.
Out of here. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Sam Anderson. Our digital producer is Tony Wagner. Ben Hethcote does video. Ethan Parrott does video intern stuff and also all the other intern stuff we make him do, which honestly, it's not much. Erica Phillips writes our newsletter, also our smart speaker skills.
That sounds so mean. Ethan works well. It's because we put him on email duty and that's a full-time job and a half.
That's right.
Today's show was engineered by Drew Jostad, who was silent but deadly as always. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. The executive director of On Demand and senior producer this week is Sitara Nieves. And the senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark.
There we go.
By God. Justice for Ethan.
I'm interested to see what people think about that. Yeah,
Ethan does so much. I know. I can't wait to hear what people think about the theory. Loved that. So great.
Yeah. It did resonate.
Oh, internet.
I'll tell you that.
You answer all our questions.